Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 26th through July 6th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only, some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Afternoon, Sean.
Your first question is, my son is 11 and has sensory processing disorder. When he was very young, he ate well and had a healthy, varied diet. But since starting creche at 2, we noticed that smells and sensory overload began affecting him. And over time, his range of foods has become more and more limited. Foods he used to eat, like spaghetti bolognese, beans and other everyday meals, have gradually been dropped. Now he has a small list of safe foods. Things like porridge, pancakes, certain sandwiches, specific brands of crisps, some fruit and recently pizza. But even that has to be from a particular place, a certain size and very specific. If a brand changes taste even slightly, he won't eat it again. He finds family mealtimes overwhelming, especially with multiple smells and people eating together. We try to encourage him to sit with us at weekends, but we don't want to cause distress. He's tall, sporty and constantly hungry, but his diet is very limited and often high in sugar or processed foods. The hardest part is that he's become very aware of it now. He wants to be able to eat more foods and gets upset and frustrated with himself when he can't. I was labelled a picky eater as a child, so I'm conscious of not shaming him, but I also don't know how best to support him. How do we help an 11-year-old with sensory challenges expand his diet in a way that feels safe and empowering for him without increasing anxiety around food?
I just think this parent is really in tune with what's going on here. And
yeah.
I think you're already helping him, just to really flag that. Sensory processing disorder, just in case people aren't clear, that's not just sensitive to sensory things. A sensory processing disorder is a neurological condition, and it's really where the brain can get very overwhelmed just in the struggle to organize things like sensory information and stimuli. So you might be thinking, oh, I don't like that smell. But if somebody's very sensitive to that in a sensory processing way, it's not just they don't like it, it's unbearable.
Yeah.
And it will
yeah.
affect how they can be in the environment. So it is something that we do have to and should make adaptations for, you know, and I think that's what this family have done. First of all, his list of safe foods is pretty good.
Yeah, porridge.
If you've got porridge in there, give him that 3-4 times a day.
Yeah.
Like, I would have no issue with that. And pancakes, you can also, now it depends on, you know, he might like them in a particular way, but you can also be creative with the ingredients, put a banana in there, whatever, he's eating fruit. And once you've got sandwiches, I always think you've got a meal.
So
don't be getting too caught up on, oh, it's high in sugar and processed foods. There's an awful lot of talk about that stuff at the moment, but fed is best.
Yeah.
And so long as you're getting him fed and he has enough energy to get through his day and achieve the things he needs to achieve for a growing, thriving 11-year-old, you're doing a great job. And so is he. This parent, you know, says that she was, or they were, a picky eater. I also was. Well, I don't know if I identify, but I was told I was a picky eater. And the best thing to do is take the pressure off, take the demand off. It's extremely stressful for somebody who simply likes what they like to be under pressure or face a demand that they must eat something that just isn't for them. And it's often about smell, it's about texture, it's about, you know, just general taste of things in general. So one of the things, look at that, low demand, and treat food, because I get that you want, and he wants at 11 to expand what he's eating. Think of it as a sensory exploration. So don't just think it's putting lists of foods there. Think of it in a sensory way. Think about things that are, you know, new textures, or at least linked to a texture that is safe. If he eats crunchy food rather than, although some of this is mushy food that's being described. Like, for example, if he really doesn't like crunchy food, don't go there. Expand the mushy foods.
Yeah.
So do that kind of thing. The other thing I'd say is take the foods he does like and explore using what's called food chaining. So, for example, if you have a child who will only eat chips, could you bring that out to a roast potato? could you bring it from there to a mashed potato?
Mm.
Once you've got potato in general there, could you do something like a gnocchi and from there into pasta? You know, so you food chain your way from safe food very slowly, very gradually. Now, I'm not a dietitian.
Though I must say, and this is my own personal experience using the argument, but it's made from the same thing. Doesn't work.
Yeah. So you have to look at texture. So to go from a chip to a mashed potato, absolutely different foods.
Yeah.
I will support any child who says that. Those are different foods. But if you can go from something that has the crunchy outside to something like a roast potato or a cubed potato, just a different manifestation of a chip, and then gradually take it from there, but very slowly. I would think it's good to consult with a pediatric registered dietitian.
Yeah.
Because they will understand exactly the sensory profile that he has. You'll be able to share with them the OT report or whoever diagnosed that sensory processing disorder, and they will be able to give you very informed advice as to how to approach this. I think, though, it's very fitting that at 11 years old, children become much more socially aware of how others are experiencing, others are perceiving them. And so while the foods he was eating were grand for him up until now, now he's aware, probably through birthday parties and things like that, that other friends are eating things that he can't eat.
Mm.
So he wants to change. So use that desire that he wants to bring in new foods, but don't rush it. Do it very slowly and stick within the parameters of safe foods. I wouldn't introduce something completely new. And I would like you to talk to a dietitian.
Yeah, because you can imagine at that age as well, what he'd be aware of if, say, if the family want to go out for dinner or if you're on holidays.
Exactly.
You might have to kind of walk around to find some place that will cater to whatever specific
difficult
thing. And he's aware of that now.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And sometimes, you know, I think it is when you come to that age where you want a bit more independence.
Mm.
You want to be able to go out with friends and have a, whatever it might be, a fast food or a snack when you're out with friends. And you can't do that. So that self-consciousness, we don't want him getting increased emotional charge or anxiety around this. We're just going to say, look, this is the way it is, but we have a plan and we're going to work on it.
Yeah.
Take the emotional charge away from food always.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I'm at my wit's end with my 9-year-old and sleep every night when she goes to bed. She's absolutely wired. She doesn't resist going up to bed, but once she's there, she just won't settle. We've tried everything. Blackout blinds, no screens an hour before bed, a long wind down routine, warm drinks, quiet reading time before lights out. Even after lights out, she's in a room singing at the top of her voice, turning the lights back on to read, chatting away to herself, and she's just full of beans. The strange thing is, she doesn't seem distressed or anxious, and she's not in bad form the next day. The lack of sleep doesn't seem to bother her, but it definitely bothers us. She just seems hyper and happy to be awake, but surely she needs more restful sleep at her age. How do we help her to actually switch off at night without turning bedtime into a battle?
Oh, yeah. As in a cast, kids can run so long on so little sleep. You know, she's got a high energy. Do you know what I'm wondering, though, as you were reading through that? What's her activity level like during the day? She seems to be carrying a lot of energy into the evening time. And, you know, if there's no other reason that she simply runs at a faster pace and at a higher level, check the activity level and that she's, and by activity level, I'm talking about physical, robust, not, you know, she's doing some class after school, but it's quite sedentary.
Mm.
You want to, I mean, at her age, I would think at least, now at very least, 1 hour of vigorous activity.
Yeah.
I'm talking swimming, jumping, running, like high, that will burn off some of this energy. So making sure she has at least 1 hour. And because she's running a little faster than maybe other kids her age are, she might need more than the at least.
Yeah.
She might benefit from 90 minutes to 2 hours of that, just so that she can burn off the energy to enable her, because she's not protesting going to bed.
Yeah, yeah.
She's quite happy to do that. It's simply she's not able to make that transition into from wind down into sleep mode. She's doing the wind down with you and then she's going, thanks for that, I'm all revved up again.
Mm.
And the singing, I mean, she sounds like a delight, actually.
She does.
She sounds lovely. But just think of outdoor time as well, because I think our children spend increasingly, their activity is indoors and it's different when it's outdoors. That change of environment, that resetting of her brain, all of that. You are winding her down at night and the no screens an hour before bed. All of that is great. I'm going to suggest something that might sound counterintuitive. Put in there a little bit of rigorous play.
Yeah.
Like, don't be afraid a bit of rough and tumble with her before bed. Oh, is that winding her up? Absolutely not. I think you've got to get rid of the residual energy she's holding on to, and kind of a burst of play in that hour before bed, and then moving into your wind down routine. That could make a difference here. I mean, developmental shifts, you know, when our kids are growing up and developmentally moving very much from young childhood into middle childhood, we can see this as a result, you know, this kind of second wind phenomena.
Yeah,
like that
exactly.
can happen around the time of a developmental shift. So sometimes moving their bedtime even 15 minutes earlier. So you're almost, you know, like with a small baby, you're trying to catch them before they get so-called overtired and you've missed the sleep window. It's a little bit like that around developmental shifts. So if it's relatively recent and it is occurring around developmental phases, there are things like that you can do. But routine and consistency is always going to win out. Just talk to her about how she must stay in her bed. You can't make her go to sleep, but she must stay in her bed. She's allowed to sing, but she has to sing quietly. So you're actually, don't get out, don't do this. Say to her, look, stay in your bed, sing to yourself, but maybe humming it really nice and soft. You reading her a book, if you'd one of those audiobook players for her as well, that might be enough. She might just need an extra voice. You know, that bit of co-regulation, she's not able to self-regulate herself into sleep.
Yeah.
So a little bit more of what feels like chatter in the room, but it could be a carefully selected audiobook. That could help as well.
Yeah. I went back to work part-time when my daughter was 9 months old. And since Christmas, my hours have increased and she's now in creche 4 days a week. She's 14 and a half months old. Every morning, she's in great form until drop-off. Then she clings to me and gets very upset at handover. She does it with her dad too, but not quite as intensely. The staff say she settles quickly and is fine during the day. And she's happy when we collect her, which feels like progress. She's had quite a few viral illnesses over the past couple of months and has become more clingy since. We're also about to move into her own room, which has been delayed due to sickness. And we're worried that might make things worse. Is this normal separation anxiety at her age? And what can we do to help her feel more secure, both at creche drop-off and with the transition to her own room?
I mean, look, she's clingy because there's been a number of viral illnesses. That all makes total sense.
Mm.
And it is really normal at her age, this kind of separation anxiety. And it's particularly that heightened charge at the point of separation. Like the creche are telling you, oh, she settles once you go.
Yeah.
It's not just with you, though. It's certainly more pronounced. So, you know, this is developmental to a large extent. Now, that doesn't mean it's not super distressing for all involved. Nobody relishes handing their child being pulled off them at the point of separation.
Yeah.
They're crying and then you're crying in the car and everybody's crying. She might settle quickly, but it might take the adult a lot longer to settle after that. Now, it is a recent change because the hours have changed only since Christmas. Like, we're still just in February.
Yeah.
So for a little one, that is still a recent change. So I would give that a little bit more time, actually, and see, she may well adjust in another few weeks. I would now, Sean, push out the introduction of any more changes for a month or so.
Yeah.
I would not be saying now is the time to move her into her own room.
Yeah.
Because she's already in a sort of little phase of resistance to the change that has occurred. And I don't think that's going to be a good outcome to bring in. And going into your own room for the first time, that's a significant life change for a child. So if you, and I don't know the circumstances, there might be another younger child.
There's a sibling there or not.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
Or at least maybe you're thinking along those lines. But I would give that another month or two if you could.
Yeah.
I wouldn't rush that. But it does feel developmental. Going to the creche, if you're driving, for example, playing the same kind of playlist, you know, just making little kind of nonverbal cues. So she is in her nervous system kind of priming herself, oh, we say goodbye at this song. You know, she's not going to cognitively get that at 14 months, but just getting her ready with a familiarity of routine and a little bit of predictability, that could help as well. But in general, I think this is a phase and I really do think and hope.
Yeah.
It will settle.
Yeah, indeed. I'm the parent of a fantastic, lively 9-year-old. In an ideal world, we would have wanted a big family, but that didn't happen for us. And my daughter is an only child. I think she's well adjusted. She's a really bright student. But I am concerned that she gets on better with adults than her classmates. I've started noticing that she's much quieter when I pick her up from school this term when she was last year, and I'm beginning to worry. She often wants to retreat to her room with her tablet and watch YouTube. We live in a busy estate and she's friends with the neighbour's children, and I've always made sure she has extracurricular activities to keep her busy and mixing with kids of her age. She loves Irish dancing. One of the other mothers actually made a comment to me about how mature my daughter was, but it wasn't in a particularly complimentary way. My daughter loves chatting to me and my friends when they come over, and to be honest, I value her opinion on a lot of things, so maybe it's my fault. She loves makeup and I think she's independent and maybe a little grown up, but is that really a problem? Do you have any advice in making sure my only daughter doesn't grow up too fast?
Well, there's contradictions in this.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, is it a problem? You're writing to us because you clearly have a question about this. So there's something in you that's saying, oh, is she like other 9-year-olds?
Yeah.
And look, you could line up 10 9-year-olds in a room and they're not going to be the same. Developmental shifts are different for each of them. She's also growing up in a mostly adult environment, you know, as a single child family. There's nothing wrong with that. And, you know, I will always challenge kind of the assertions kids need siblings. There's no evidence to support that. She's in school. She's got activities. You're in a busy estate. She's friends with the neighbor's kids. She is perfectly socially engaged in all of that. Comments from other parents, you know, don't be worried about that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think when someone says, isn't she very mature in a non-complimentary way, there is a little inference, isn't she a little precocious?
Yes.
Really what's maybe being
said.
Well,
actually, that's so interesting because kids kind of, well, some adults, I should say, you know, if a child of 9 or 10 addresses you in, you know, quite a fluent way, you can... You cheeky thing, you know, I'm not necessarily being cheeky, they're just talking to you.
At all, and it's what they're used to. And this little girl is used to talking to adults. She wouldn't be intimidated by that. This parent is saying, look, she hangs around with me and my friends. I value her opinion. I just want to catch that bit.
Yeah.
Okay? And a little word of caution about that. I'd be the last one to say children can't have opinions that are valuable. Of course they can. They often have, they should be running the country, arguably many times with the opinions they have. What you want is to make sure that that piece of your relationship of parent-child is still there. You're not peers. You're friendly, but she's not your friend and you're not her friend.
Mm.
And I don't, and, you know, people go, gosh, you know, you can be friends with your child. Not at this stage. You are in the role of parent. You can have a tight attachment and you can have a strong bond and connection and you can share lovely moments. But she's the child and you're the parent.
Mm.
And that's such an important relationship for her. Later on in life, you can certainly grow and develop your relationship, but she's 9. She's not 19. She's not 29. She's a young child. It's really important that she have opportunities to be 9. What we can see in children who become mature or seemingly mature very quickly, we'd often call it pseudo-maturity. It's not quite real. And because to be authentically mature, you have to have gone through all the stages of childhood.
Yeah.
So that's how you reach and develop maturity. But children who kind of role play and act and can embody maturity, you're always wondering, did they get enough time to be 7, 8, 9 and doing the things that children thrive on and need to develop at that age? So encourage and nurture her connections with her own peer group. Really look at boundaries because, you know, maybe you're happy to have her hang around and chat with your friends, but are your friends happy or comfortable? Because that inhibits adult, or it should inhibit adult conversation.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's important that she also get a message from you, oh, this is my time with my friends. And when you have your time with your friends, I don't hang around and insert myself in there. A little bit of that parent-child boundary. I would watch that at this stage because otherwise it's going to be very hard for her to understand herself in relation to her peers who are not having these experiences. And that's the piece she's going to need now in this next stage of her development.
Yeah. Joanna, thanks a million.
Thank you.
As ever, Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.